Welcome to the Film Stage Podcast. I'm Dan Rao.
And I'm Dan Mecca.
And this is episode 41.
This is.
Yes. And we're going to talk about most of 75% of the week's wide releases. We're going to talk about Rango and the...
We missed
BC State. Yeah. So Rango, The Adjustment Bureau, and Take Me Home Tonight.
Yeah.
And we didn't do a little podcast last week. So do you want to just do quick...
Well, let me quickly, before we start, this is a shout out to Julie Mecca, who loves Eddie Money, the singer who gave us Take Me Home Tonight, the song, which then became Take Me Home Tonight, the film.
Which is, the song's not even in the movie.
Yeah, not at all, but, you know,
yeah,
you shout out when you can. Okay, go right on, Jordan.
So, the Academy Awards was last Sunday.
It was.
So, quick thoughts, kind of a disappointing show all around.
Jordan, if by kind of you mean completely, then you are correct. It kind of was a disappointment. You know, I think it started off pretty well with the nice little kind of Billy Crystal-esque, you know, mashup of the best pictures, and you had the Inception thing going on with Anne Hathaway and James Franco, and that was kind of funny. And then it just got worse and worse.
Yeah. Hey, someone made a good point. I forget what podcast. It actually might have been Slash Film, but they said how, like, we've already seen parodies of all these movies, like, endlessly repeated on the internet, so it kind of loses that... So with the internet age,
I guess just primarily Inception.
Inception was,
you know,
big
that
one,
was the big one. Yeah,
but it was nice. The Fighter ones was kind of funny, I guess.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, yeah, but that was parody on the internet too.
Funny,
I think James Franco looked like he just kind of was regretting the decision to host the entire night, and Hathaway was just trying too hard.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, like overly. It was weird. It was like, you know. There were no jokes.
Compensating for what
right,
was,
I mean,
was trying,
and it wasn't working. Like, I mean, there were clearly a lack of jokes, almost like purposely, but like because of that, just a tremendous amount of dead air. Like at the end, she like complimented him for a great job, and like it was clear that the rest of the audience just disagreed. There was 15 minutes, I'll say, that really almost saved it for me. Billy Crystal came out. He killed her for 5 minutes. He introduced that cool Bob Hope hologram thing, and then Bob Graham, you know, dead hologram Bob Hope introduced Robert Downey Jr. and Jude Law, who were both very funny. And then, like, so for 15 minutes, you were like, "Oh my gosh, like this is what I wanted." And then it went back.
Yeah.
So
can't agree there. I don't really like any of those parts. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right. Well,
I mean, I feel like Oscars should be about celebrating filmmaking, not celebrating Oscars. So, like, the ceremony itself.
Yeah, but Bob Hope, you know, is not just the Oscars. I mean, but, you know, not to get into an argument, but yeah, okay.
But
well, that's fair.
All right. And then just in terms of the Best Picture winner, I think you know what we're going to say, but
yeah,
it's a shame that...
Yeah, I mean, there's no reason to really go into it. I thought it was kind of careless, too, that, like, the way that they introduced all of those movies was to put it over the King's Speech, actually.
Right. Yes. Someone made a point
little,
that they did...
A little careless,
the intro thing, they did use the Social Network music. But
true.
Still.
That's a very good point, actually.
But leading,
that's a very good point.
Leading up to it, like, you know it's going to win on the final... montage, so yeah, kind of
didn't yeah
really like
I mean
it.
Okay, yeah, but you know, actually I've not thought about that until you just brought it up, and that is a good point. But yeah, I still agree it was a little tasteless, but you know, they were trying to do some, it was like they're trying to do a million things different, and they ended up doing everything the same.
Yeah. Couldn't have said it better. All right. And then I mean, in terms of last week's releases, we didn't see Hall Pass, so sorry. And and then I saw Midnight Showing of Drive Angry.
And how, Jordan,
now,
how was it?
This is quick thoughts, Patrick Lassier, who gave us My Bloody Valentine. He was
what is his name?
Lassier.
Okay.
Is that
no? No, I don't know. I'm asking.
Okay.
You.
Lassier.
Okay. Yeah, sure.
And yeah, he gave us. I mean, he was an editor on the Saw movies and stuff, and then he
gave us My Bloody Valentine,
My Bloody Valentine 3D,
which I enjoyed a lot. Actually,
enjoyed,
yeah.
And Drive Angry. It has a few really promising sequences.
Right.
Where it just kind of fulfills that crazy, crazy vibe that the trailers are kind of selling.
That grindhouse vibe.
And it's another one of those grindhouse movies after Machete, after even Hobo with a Shotgun, which we haven't really talked about yet. But like, when you go in, you think you want this for an hour and a half, and I've never had a movie really
that
at the end I was like, yes, I'm so glad I got that for an hour and a half. Like, yeah, I mean, still I would.
Well, I mean, it's like, it's the Death Proof theory in my mind. You know, I mean, you know, Death Proof, 75 minutes long. It's like you make a movie that's purposely bad, and you know, you're a great director, and all I can think about when I'm watching the movie is what other projects he could have been working on, you know. Yeah. And that's just, and that, I mean, and that's just how I feel about it, you know what I mean? So,
and, I will say, Machete, Drive Angry is very competently made. It's, you know, it's not kind of like the mess Machete was. Even if Machete was trying to get that vibe, it still was a mess of a movie in many other ways.
Oh, I agree.
And then even, I mean, if we're going to compare it to Hellboy with a Shotgun, which a lot of people are, it is not as depraved as that movie, and it's not, that movie is very much, you know, a young filmmaker's first film.
What, Hobo?
Hobo, yeah. And this is obviously someone that you know, he's been in the business for a long time. And
well, I just want to see him. I want to see, you know, Lucier, you know, Lucier, however you say his name. I want to see him do something, you know, out of the element of the Saw movies and out of the element of My Bloody Valentine and Drive Angry, and, you know, try something new, you know.
I don't think we're going to do that.
Yeah, and I feel the same way, actually. I'm not, this is off topic, but his movie's coming out soon, too. I feel the same way about Darren Lynn Bosman. Because, you know, he is clearly a talent. But I don't know. I mean, is he stretching his talents by making movies like Mother's Day? I guess we'll find out. But, you know. Yeah.
So I honestly wouldn't recommend Drive Angry, at least seeing it in theaters. I think you might have fun with it. Watch it one night with some friends.
Some beers, right?
Yeah. Nicolas Cage is kind of not the performance you want from him. He's very subdued outside of a few scenes. Amber Heard, very, very attractive. I thought she did actually a really, really good job. But the highlight for me is William Fichtner.
The Fichtner factor.
He is just amazing in this movie. Like, he does his character does so many things, like, all at the same time. And it's like, and just in terms of, like, you know, he does what you want Nicolas Cage to do, kind of. It's
really?
Kind of that out there performance.
Interesting.
But also being kind of creepy, not knowing what he's going to do next. It's great.
All right, well, so is it worth it for Fichtner? If you're a Fichtner fan, if you're someone who goes into movies and says, you know what, William Fichtner's in this movie. And also, David Morse is in this movie. How's David Morse?
Yeah, no, I mean, he's
not
fine.
Really?
He's not really in it very long. Okay. Yeah, and, but if you are a fan of the Fichtner, I would say check it out. But still, I can't give it a hearty recommend.
Fair enough.
All right, let's get into the real stuff, the real reviews. You want to start off with the bomb of the week? Take me home.
That is actually a good one to start with.
So this movie was shot in almost 4 years ago. It'll be 4 years ago in June or July. And originally titled Kids in America.
And then briefly titled Young Americans.
Yeah. Michael Dowse. Is it Dowsey or Dowse?
Dowse. Let's call him Dowse.
Let's call him Dowse.
Who had a, you know, significant hand in That 70s Show.
Yeah. And
who does this movie star?
Topher Grace, surprisingly.
Oh, weird.
Yeah. And, I mean, the reason for the... Well, it's kind of... It's an 80s film. Not really a parody of an 80s film. It is filmed... I would
that
say
takes
very,
place
very
in the
competently,
80s. Right? Yeah, I agree.
Like an 80s film, and then
I mean, as far as we know, who were born in 88, but yeah,
yeah, but you know, all the ones we've seen,
right? Of course.
And then, yeah, the reason for the delay they said was because of the heavy cocaine use, which I don't know about that. I don't know.
Really?
Yeah,
I mean, I don't know. I think
Topher
Grace said. I think you make a movie like this, and you know, everybody in the world who's on the production side, rather. I mean, and almost in a way, rightfully so, wants to find a way to make a PG-13 because, I mean, why not have a movie like this be PG-13? You know, I guess. But apparently, the filmmakers were like steadfast in their belief that it was the 80s and there needed to be some cocaine use and blah blah blah, and apparently that lost them a couple of years. And then Ron Howard and Imagine came in to the rescue, apparently, and you know,
retitled it and repackaged it,
and then Relativity came in finally and bought it, actually, and found a release date. And
pretty heavy marketing.
And and it does not look like it paid off. Did not do well today. But it is a very good movie. A very enjoyable movie, I guess, is what you can say.
I think the strong points here, there is a lot of... cameos? I don't know.
Cameos. I mean, just a lot.
Supporting.
There's a lot of people in the movie. I mean, you know, it was shot 4 years ago. Yeah. There are a lot of people in the movie who now are making something themselves.
Yeah.
Chris Pratt's in it.
From Parks and Recreation. Dimitri Martin has, I think, the best supporting role.
Right. Now, he's doing things. I mean, he's been in an Ang Lee movie. Anna Faris is kind of like one of the female comedians, you know what I mean? Like, she has kind of a name for herself.
Yeah.
Topher Grace is... Dan Fogler has a career now. Yeah. Topher Grace, ironically, kind of is the only guy who hasn't really done more than what you'd expect him to do.
He was actually hotter in 2007.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, I assume much to the filmmaker's chagrin, probably.
Yeah. And because you probably haven't seen this movie, with a quick rundown, it's just Topher Grace is a Suncoast Video employee.
Yes. Who and also MIT graduate.
Yes, MIT graduate. And he's back. I think he just graduated. It's a summer that he, after he graduated.
Summer after graduation in LA.
And the girl of his dreams from high school is back and visits him in the store.
Her name is Toy Frederick in the movie. You hear her name a thousand times. Yeah. That's what I'm saying.
Yes.
And that is Teresa Palmer, who is an up-and-comer who should be watched. I really like her a lot.
And and so there's this party that night, and she invites. He says he's already going and all this stuff.
He lies and tells her he works for Goldman Sachs, so that she thinks, surprise, surprise, that he's impressive. I mean, this is a John Hughes movie, essentially. You know, not unlike what was the Easy A kind of is like that too. Yeah, and so and essentially, it is a night. You know, the night of their lives, the night where Topher Grace's character realizes that he's got to man up and make some decisions in his life, and so does Anna Faris, who is her is Topher Grace's sister, and her boyfriend is Chris Pratt, and so yeah, it's a movie like that. It's exactly that movie, and you know, yeah, it's formulaic, and yeah, we've seen it before, and yeah, maybe John Hughes did it a little better. But yeah, I mean, I enjoyed it. I laughed a lot, and I don't know.
There's some strong pieces of writing, like one scene, Topher Grace and Teresa Palmer finally end up alone together on the trampoline. I really liked that scene.
I mean, that's a scene where it's like, you see it happening, you know, 20 minutes before it happens, and then it happens, and you're like, oh no, like, you know, how are they going to ruin this? And they do not at all.
Yeah. And then all the there's a dance scene that was I thought was handled really well in terms of the editing, and obviously this movie is carried almost from start to end with music, which helps
definitely.
So if you find that something like gimmicky or something, you will probably won't really love.
Right, of course. I mean, the '80s song is obviously, you know, there's a lot of Duran Duran and there's a lot of, you know, that kind of a music. But like you said, oddly enough, really no Eddie Money, which is funny. But but no, I found the editing for a comedy like this surprisingly smart, and it's a very fast movie. It flies by, and I, you know, and also, like, you know, I hate to reference other sites, but I really enjoyed Cinema Blends for reasons that Take Me Home Tonight is a must see, right? So definitely check that out if you have a free minute, because they make some really good points that we're probably forgetting to make right now.
And I will say, I mean, in terms of negative aspects, there are some jokes that just fall dead flat.
And like, most of them are courtesy of Dan Fogler,
yeah.
Who, in fairness, in the comedy department, holds most of the weight, too.
Yeah, so, I mean, he does,
He does his best again.
Especially some cocaine-y scenes, which are great.
Right, which are all the cocaine stuff is funny. Michael Biehn has a nice little cameo, which is funny, obviously, because if you saw the 80s spoof that the cast of Take Me Home Tonight did, was on Funny or Die.
And thefilmstage.com.
And thefilmstage.com. You can watch Distraction. Michael Biehn, of course, was in the Terminator film. And, you know, that is an 80s iconic movie. So that's a nice little piece of, meta or
and
whatever you want.
There's also, I mean, obviously with a movie like this, and in terms of Topher Grace's character, there's the father aspect. You know, he's not living up to his dreams. His father paid
so much money for him to go to MIT.
And there's a scene like that was handled well, I thought.
There's a scene at the dinner table.
But also the police.
Oh yeah, that was handled well too.
But yeah.
I mean, I think overall it was a well-made movie, and I think it's kind of a shame that the production got stalled for so long, because I feel like we're living in a time. Well, I guess we always have kind of lived in this time where when production gets halted like that, people just make up reasons for it to be bad. And then by the time it comes out, and we're gonna talk about a movie like that in a couple minutes, but by the time a movie like that movie comes out, you kind of just find reasons to not like it, and you blame it on the halts and blah, blah, blah. And I just think that that definitely is kind of a shame. So
yeah, I would definitely say rent it. Or go with some friends when it's available to you, because you know it's not doing strong right now at the box office, so we'll see how
that
long
is
it stays in theaters.
That is an understatement. It is not doing strong at all, I think.
But yeah, I would recommend this movie.
Yeah,
as a
definitely go see it. It's definitely worth your time. Definitely a great date movie. And I do have a hunch that even though this will definitely and it is definitely bombing right now, it will have an afterlife that many people will be surprised to see, and they'll say, hey, you know, like, this was a movie that kind of slipped under the radar. So, yeah.
Yeah. Alright, do you want to, let's talk about a movie I saw.
Yeah, I saw
the first animation from Paramount Studios.
To be done by ILM.
This is Rango. Now, this is a film that kind of had an odd marketing campaign. I wasn't really sure what it was about. The first teaser
was awesome. With like the fish
flying. Was awesome. Yeah,
loved it.
And, I mean, they were just selling it kind of on Johnny Depp and as his chameleon. And
a chameleon with an identity crisis, actually, was the tagline. Yeah.
Was a plot. It was like the only plot.
That's what I mean. Yeah. Sorry, the plot.
Yeah, and so I literally had no idea what this movie was about going in. And I'll just quickly say what I liked and didn't like about it. The animation is amazing. Like, if you complain about, you know, even people complain about the DreamWorks animals and stuff like that. And even, I mean, even the Pixar is not, they're not realistic animations. Like, they look beautiful.
Right, but this
like, feels, I wouldn't say realistic because it is still talking animals, but as realistic as possible, as they could. Like, I was scared about, like, for some of the villains in this movie. And just really creative character designs. There's a bird that has an arrow like through its eye the whole time. Like it's like really,
awesome.
Really fun.
Yeah.
And and just the kind of pacing and humor in this movie is very odd, very off kilter. It's pretty much a Western film surrounding this chameleon. But then something I didn't like is just the story is very there's no surprises to it, and it's not that teaser sells it as this like odd film with lots of surprises in it, kind of.
Maybe you can help me with this. What excited me, and what still, I haven't seen it yet, what still excites me about this movie is that it looks to be like a return to form for Gore Verbinski, who like gave us Mousetrap and like these weird movies in the beginning of his career.
Yeah.
And then like, I mean, not that there aren't moments of the Pirates movies that are like that, but it seemed to be kind of like a Mouse Hunt, that it seemed to be a return to kind of someone giving him a lot of money and saying, hey, like, you know,
I mean, it definitely
make this crazy movie.
The last two Pirates films felt somewhat phoned in, I would say, and this definitely is I'd return to form to some degree. But I was hoping for kind of an odder story. And there are sequences that are odd, but for the most part, you know, I'm not going to get into spoilers, but it's something you've seen before. And doesn't really, there's a lot of people have been complaining that there's no heart in it. And I think the style makes up for that, but there really is no, they're during the emotional scenes, it didn't really hit for me at all.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's a shame.
But like I said, fantastic animation. The film starts out kind of an odd sequence where he's in a aquarium, but you don't know that yet. A chameleon. He's owned by a family, and he's kind of acting out this lonely life he has with these a headless Barbie doll and the fish you see in the trailer, the wind up fish, and he's pretending he's an actor and stuff. And then, and you're like, really? Is this like the animation style for the whole movie? Because I'd really, it was before any review, so I didn't know what to expect. And then, the car like hits a bump, and like he flies out in this aquarium, and you get into this whole world of the Western that you're in. That's really, really well done. Speaking of Roger Deakins, who did visual consulting work on How to Train Your Dragon and WALL-E, and the cinematographer from True Grit, Assassination, Shawshank Redemption,
who has not yet all, to
not
win
all,
an Oscar.
Not all the Coen Brothers movies, but
most of them.
But most of them, yes.
Well, which ones has he done? Do you know?
Two of the early ones. I don't know. Miller's Crossing, I want to say.
Fair enough. Okay.
He's been kind of getting into the animation game as of late.
And the digital game.
Well, you mean?
Because he shot.
Movies? Oh.
Well, no, because he shot Now is the first movie he shot
digitally.
Digital
film,
digital
yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So he's doing, the point being, he's doing different things, which is cool,
yeah.
Which is awesome.
And you can tell, I mean, there's some fantastic shots in this film. I wouldn't say to the extent of How to Train Your Dragon, but very strong. And I mean, the supporting cast is great. There's one that would be a spoiler if I said.
How is Isla Fisher?
Good. She has a complete Western accent.
Is it Confessions of a Shopaholic good? Is my
no,
question.
No, I mean, no.
Okay.
That's what I love about.
All right. Well, you know.
But
okay.
It's not like, what am I, there's an animated movie that came out recently. Oh, Megamind was one, but there was another one I saw recently. Just the whole time you're thinking of
the actors,
like the whole time. And this one, even though they're famous actors, Bill Nye's in this, a lot of other people.
Well, Johnny Depp.
Alfred Molina, isn't it? I'm thinking about the other ones, yeah. Oh, you know who's in this?
Who?
Ray Winstone.
Really?
That's funny, yeah.
That's cool.
And just they fit perfectly, and the character designs are so well done that they just it just feels like they, you know, a lot of thought went into this one. And I don't know how much more I want to say about it, but I would highly recommend it.
Well, you don't
want to
spoil anything, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
We're not going to do a spoiler. I will say, you know, it is a story you've seen before, but if you have comments or questions, definitely email us. We can talk about it later.
But you recommend it.
I recommend it. I would definitely recommend it. And, I mean, it did really well this weekend, so we'll see how it does next weekend.
I'll say this. It's just nice to see that it did well, if only because it's a 2D animation. It's by a credible director. It's from ILM. And it's just nice to see movies like that kind of succeed, you know, that get positively reviewed.
Because a lot of people felt, you know, a lot of children I would think would be turned off by the marketing campaign. Maybe. So it's nice to see that they aren't. And I wonder, because in my screening, it was one of those Saturday morning 10 a.m. screenings where it's all kids and stuff.
Right.
And I wouldn't say the kids were entirely into it, so I wonder if next weekend there'll be some sort of drop
off.
That's
the same way I felt with Fantastic Mr. Fox.
Great animation to compare it to.
Because, like, that was a movie where I saw that in theaters, and there were a lot of kids in my theater, and, like, I laughed a lot, and the kids I were with laughed a lot, and people, like, parents laughed, but I could kind of feel the kids, like, wondering what was going on.
Well, that was a fun
and so, movie. You know, I mean, we, same kind of thing with this, or?
There were definitely moments that, like, catered to kids. Unlike, I think Fantastic Mr. Fox didn't have that many sequences.
Yeah, not at all.
But, no, I think this is more of a... there's a lot of thrilling action sequences that, you know, that Gore Verbinski is known for, even
right.
from Mouse Hunt.
Yeah, I mean, there's some good, there's some great sequences in that Mouse Hunt, which also, I think, catered to kids pretty well, too.
Yeah, and then there are actually, I think almost all the action sequences in this film are kind of chase sequences as well, like in Mouse Hunt.
Right.
So, kind of, yeah, really well done. I could tell everyone in the theater was excited during those. But there are odd sequences. Like, that's kind of what I loved about it. There's a scene early on where it's like, he's like in the desert and he's like dreaming and he sees like the giant, his giant fish friend, whatever, float by. Now, it's a lot bigger than the trailer, than that first teaser. But and it's like in this like weird, like abstract, it's almost reminding me of something from Scott Pilgrim, like the white, the subspace or whatever. But anyways... Yeah, so, yeah, recommend, I would say.
Yeah, good.
Check it out, definitely.
Hopefully this will lead to more and more original stuff for Mr. Verbinski.
Yes, who is doing another Western, The Lone Ranger, with Johnny Depp.
Which is not original, but okay.
But not original, that's true.
We'll take what we can, I guess, from that man.
Yes.
All right, shall we?
Yeah, let's go into our feature
review.
Let's
do it.
George Nolfi's The Adjustment Bureau. This is a film.
The one and only George Nolfi, the on-set screenwriter for The Bourne Ultimatum.
Yeah. Delayed from October.
Yeah, and no, this is, and like we were talking about, this is a movie that I think the worry was it was going to be plagued by these kind of rumors, like, why is it getting pushed back? Why is it getting pushed back? It got pushed back. I think all said and done, like, how long? Was it just October? Was it supposed to come out earlier than that?
Was it
just October?
I feel like it was a year.
Yeah. I feel like a year pushback, maybe.
And I just had an interview with him from our writer, Jack Giroux.
Right.
Who he said he gave the reason, because I originally thought it was because of Black Swan and the ballerina aspects.
Oh, interesting. No, not that.
But he said it was because of True Grit and Hereafter. They just don't want to cloud it with Matt Damon.
That is interesting, actually.
And then another rumor I heard, which I haven't followed up on, is that they reshot the ending of the film.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I wonder what the original
And someone
was.
Said, we'll talk about this, but they said, it might have been a spoilers, but it was CG, which is odd. The backgrounds, if you know what I'm talking about. Which is odd.
Weird.
On a rooftop. Anyways, we'll get into it.
Anyway, okay.
Let's get into it.
The Adjustment Bureau.
Hit us with the basic
is the movie
story.
We're talking about.
Philip K. Dick adaptation from a short story.
From the short story, The Adjustment Team.
Yeah.
Philip K. Dick, in case you don't know, is a famous sci-fi author. He wrote such things as
Minority.
They Shoot Horses, Don't They? Or no, no, I'm sorry. That is a Sidney Pollack movie. What is the name of the Androids dream of electronic sheep or something like that. That is Blade Runner. And then, you know, Minority Report was a short story that he wrote. Next, which is, don't go to that one for reference. And like a bunch of other movies, you'd be amazed, actually, about just the catalog of fucking Philip K. Dick movies that, or, you know, Philip K. Dick
inspired movies.
Scanner Darkly, which I read that book, and it's a great movie by Linklater if you haven't seen. Rotoscope.
No.
Anyway, this is another one of them, and I think in the top tier of Philip K. Dick adaptations. This is a sci-fi romance, emphasis on the romance. I would even more call it a fantasy romance, really.
Yeah.
Because really, there's not a lot of science fiction. You know, there's not a lot of science in this movie. But, you know, it stars Matt Damon as this politician, this up-and-coming politician named David Norris, who is a House of Representatives member in New York, who's running for Senate. In the beginning of the movie, because of some photos, he loses the race, and he goes to the bathroom of the Waldorf Astoria to practice his concession speech. And who's hiding in the bathroom, Jordan?
Emily Blunt.
Who's British in the film. And she... What is her name?
Great.
Let's check that up. But anyway, her name is Emily Blunt in real life. And Elise, thank you. Elise is in the male bathroom. What? Because she's hiding from security because she crashed a wedding. One of the best meet cute scenes I've seen in years. Literally reminded me of what it's like to watch love happen.
Yeah.
And
not
I,
love happens.
And love not happen. Love happens, thank God. But to watch love happen in on celluloid and honestly, from then on, I was just kind of with this movie.
Oh yeah.
You know, and that honestly.
Well, it's because like there's so many movies. I mean, we've talked about it recently that like they make the falling in love part of the film like brush over it or make it into montages in this movie like
that's the whole movie.
What every movie needs is like one of these scenes that you can instantly tell they're in love, and it's,
I mean, this is like a scene that like makes Hitchcock movies worth it, you know what I mean? It's probably a loaded statement, but like if you don't believe that Cary Grant and Anne-Marie Saint, I believe that's her name, I feel bad if I got that wrong, but I think that's her, if you don't believe in North by Northwest, I mean, which is a very thin movie, you know, on purpose. If you don't believe during that train scene that Cary Grant and Anne-Marie Saint aren't in love with each other, then who cares about the rest of the movie? You know what I mean? Like, the point of the rest of the movie hinges on that scene. And you're right, like, so many movies either, like, delete that scene, or they like, you know, they brush over it.
Frankly don't have like the talent, like the script behind it to deliver it.
I mean, not even the script. I mean, yeah, the it script, could be improv. Like, just the confidence of the director to know that Matt Damon and Emily Blunt are like two of the most talented actor and actresses. Like, they're here for a reason, and you just feel that like just mutual confidence. Like, you know, clearly some of the stuff wasn't written. Clearly. They knew it was golden, you know? And so I just love watching that.
Yeah, and I also have to give credit to, like, the editors or who, if Nofi was over this, but, like,
oh my
there's
God,
scenes
totally.
Where, like, you could tell another director would end it because, quote-unquote, it could be getting boring or whatever.
Exactly.
And he doesn't, and I gotta thank, just get on my knees and thank
him. It's literally a romance in a world where, like, there are doors with portals, and if you have a fedora on, you can, like, get into Yankee Stadium from, like, you know, wherever they were in New York City. You know what I mean? And it's like, do they explain these things? Not really. Not too much. But I liked it. I mean, the lack of exposition. And as a matter of fact, we'll get into this later, but, like, it's the exposition itself that kind of is the weakest part of the film, you know, which, is a whole nother thing, but... The fact that the romance throughout the entire film... And this is the thing. Like, when I went to see this movie, I was worried because you have this amazing romance in the beginning, and then it starts to get kind of crazy with all this, like, fantasy sci-fi stuff.
Man.
John Slattery comes in. His name is Richardson. Or is it Richardson? Yeah. And he's, like, this guy. You don't know who he is. You figure out he's kind of, somewhat of a pseudo-angel. This dude who, you know, is trying to dictate how the world works, and you don't know who his boss is, and you're like, oh, this is like a whole nother movie. And then right when you think that, like, you know, this movie's gonna turn into, you know, Dark City or something, the romance survives. You know, you have another nice little meet cute between Emily Blunt and Matt Damon, and you find out not too long after that the romance is gonna be the thing that's gonna push this movie through. And I just was so refreshed.
Yeah,
you know,
And there's these time jumps in the film that I thought worked really well.
Yeah.
And kind of realistic too.
Totally.
Some people I heard said, like, you know, if they were 3 years apart, like, there is, because there's even a lot of the film. Well,
there's an 11-month jump.
Well, later on. The first jump is 3 months. I mean, sorry, 3 years.
No, the first jump is 11 months. No, I'm right about this. The first...
100% positive.
The first... No, you're wrong.
Yeah, no.
No, because it's the first... No, because the first jump is he runs... Right, he runs for office. He loses. He meets her. He gives like an amazing concession speech that's like really funny, and then he becomes a lawyer. And then it says because he loses the number. No, there's a scene. It says he gets her number from Emily Blunt because he runs into her on the bus, which was like unplanned, and that's why John Slattery, who's an angel or whatever he is, these Justin Bureau people. Right. Are concerned about this. He gets her number, then they confront him.
Yeah.
Burn the number. And then it says 11 months later, I think. Oh wait, no, that's before that happens.
There is, but that's the scene on the with the coffee.
Right.
That before that, that morning.
Right.
There's a 3 month that before that 3 years. Sorry, three then. I keep saying month. 3 years.
No, the 3 years is after that.
No, it's not. It is before
there
that.
There you go.
I am 100. Well, you can write in and I'll prove it.
Yeah, well, yeah. Okay.
No, they I mean they meet at Waldorf.
Yep.
And then he gives the speech. Obviously loses. Obviously still in love with this girl. Then there's a 3 year jump. 100. I could never be more positive about anything because that's the first thing where it, like, shocked me because I thought this film was all gonna be just one day type.
Right,
thing.
Right.
And so definitely that. And then they do the coffee thing. Then it goes through, you know, a little bit of the story and we're spoiling and stuff, but and then there is a 11th month because in that 3 year period she gets engaged, so there's no way that happens in 11 months. There's another proof for you, Dan. And then then there is 11 months after
oh,
that
you're right.
between
oh, damn.
When
okay.
she
okay you're right
gets re-engaged. Shit. Sorry, there's a lot of spoilers going on. She gets re-engaged during that 11th month to her lover. So fuck
damn
you, man. Fuck
damn
your
it.
Face.
Okay, okay, you're right. Jones right. Okay.
Yeah. So those time jumps that we just spoiled worked.
No. But they worked though.
They worked.
That's the point.
Yes.
That's the point.
Yes. And like these, there's like the two kind of action scenes you could say, but it's really impressive because no guns. You know,
no
literally,
guns. Thank
literally
you.
Literally just people running around, and it,
like,
it works
thank
so
you,
well.
No guns.
Yeah.
Like, can there just not
it's
be
not
guns
even,
sometimes?
Yeah.
Like, please.
Yeah.
Like, let me just point this out. Before this movie started, I saw 6 trailers. Okay, I saw 6 trailers, and I'm not necessarily knocking the movies. I haven't seen any of these movies, obviously, but I literally 4 out of the 6 trailers were about aliens who were somehow attacking the Earth. And that the people on Earth had guns to defend themselves from these alien attackers. So, like, by the time the Adjustment Bureau started, I was so tired of watching movies about, like, extraterrestrial forces attacking the Earth that to see a movie where there were no guns, there was human interaction, there was honest comedy, there was self-aware film writing, like, you know, self-aware screenwriting.
What's another thing about the movie you're talking
about?
You
know what I mean? Like,
a lot of people...
to see all of that happen in one movie was honestly, like, my eyes started to bleed. Because, like, I didn't even remember what that looked
right.
like
it's
after all those trailers, you know?
Right.
My eyes are fine now, by the way.
Oh, thank God.
Okay, thank God.
Yeah, the other, I mean, the comedy in this movie, a lot of people, I've heard...
I think
you know,
they think it's unintentional.
Yeah, it's supposed to not be funny, but...
I think they're wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree. I mean, I laughed, and I still liked... I like that about the movie that you.
Right, I mean that made me like the movie more.
I mean, this premise is not, you know, as deadly serious as something like Inception makes out, you know, with the score.
Right, I mean,
the score by Thomas Newman is very light.
Yeah, but you know, it's funny. I've heard a lot. I feel like a lot of people don't like the score, but I really liked it. There's like a jazziness to it, and you know, I totally dug it. Yeah, I don't agree with those people. I think it totally works on the level it's playing at. Because I think in the end of the day, it's meant to be a light movie. Huh. You know, it's a romance.
Yeah, this is not a movie where the last shot you're gonna fucking like blow your brains out and wonder what's gonna happen.
Yeah, I mean, this is not a spinning top ending. You know, this is not meant to be like a what? You know, like what is the point of this? No, it's a romance. you know, a guy loves, you know, a boy loves a girl, and the boy wants the girl, and the boy has to make some hard decisions. Like, boom, there it is. Yeah. You know, and the girl has to make some hard decisions. And boom, there it is. Emily Blunt gets to do things in this movie that, like, actresses these days, like an actress like Jennifer Aniston, for example, you know, who's a movie star, you know, yeah. Who should be able to choose whatever she wants to do, you know? Like, she hasn't been able to do anything like this since Friends with Money, you know, which is like a $3 million indie movie. This is like an $80 million studio film, and Emily Blunt gets to actually act, like, if you can fucking believe it. Like, yeah. That's, you know, God bless that. Like, that's awesome. A lot of nice surprises. Seriously, yeah.
And yeah, and for the, as good as the romance is, the sci-fi twist is like a nice little twist, and when it does get a little weak, you know, you're still pulling the romance, which is nice about this movie. They don't forget about one thing when they're talking about another thing.
No, exactly. I mean, I guess, you know, in that point, you know, the third act, in the sci-fi world that they've created gets a little flimsy, sure. The exposition kind of gets to be a little, they fall back on it, I guess, or something like that. But, you know, it's, yeah, I mean, I'm not going to defend it because I really don't know how, frankly, because, like, you know, it is flimsy. But
there's, like, a rule, because it's a movie where you're making the rules so you can, you know, obviously make them up, but there's one where,
if they have a true kiss, right?
Oh, is no, the one I was talking about is, like, the water. And, like, he repeats it 3 times throughout the movie. Anthony Mackie, he's like, it's raining, so we're good now.
Right, well, Anthony Mackie, for those who have, you know, Anthony Mackie plays another kind of one of these Adjustment Bureau angel people who works under John Slattery. By the way, let me just say that John Slattery, I mean, not that it needs to be said, but he's just a powerhouse. Just charmer personified. Just, you know, yes.
Yeah.
Yes on all accounts to John Slattery.
Yep.
I hope the man finds just all the work in the world. Like, there's that interview where he said he wrote a script. Someone make that script. The man deserves to direct a movie or, you know, to be in a movie that he wrote or something. Because he's just a talent, you know?
Totally, yeah. And, you know, the visual effects, very well done.
Totally. The great door portal chase scene.
Is there any other visual effects? I don't think there are.
No, but I mean, you know, well, you know, a door portal chase scene to rival Monsters, Inc., as everyone said.
Yeah, yeah. I guess we could talk about spoilers.
Yeah, it's going to do it a little bit.
All right, so if you listen to this past this point, if you haven't seen Adjustment Bureau, go see it. It did pretty well this weekend. Decent.
Totally. Yeah, no, it did, you know, better than expected, which is nice.
So check it out. And yeah, from this moment on, spoilers. So, did we talk about, well, we kind of hinted at the time breaks and then.
Right. I mean, we don't need to go into that.
But the very end, I mean, leading up to this, well, what do you think about the rules? Oh, a great scene that I want to talk about. Terrence
Stamp. Mr. Stamp. Oh, you're talking about the ballet scene where I cried like a little baby.
Well, that's a good scene, but before that, when he kind of it's the kind of that exposition that they're in the what is it called, the hangar or whatever you
right call the hangar it. Where they take all the people who know about the adjustment
right plan. Right, and he explains how, like, through the history of time, like, when they adjusted
yeah that
stuff.
Was nice. I mean, that I was like kind of a nice little touch. Terrence Stamp has a moment where he's like, oh, you know, when we, you know, we, you know, blah blah blah, we were controlling everything, and then we decided to give you guys free will, and then you gave us the Dark Ages for a few years, and then we returned with the Renaissance and the Inquisition, and then we decided again to let you leave, and then in 1910, and then you gave us 2 world wars and the Holocaust and the after the Cuban Missile Crisis, we decided blah blah. Yeah, that was good.
Because I mean, there's some sci-fi movies that just don't take place in a world like our world, and there's some that do, like this, which I always appreciate those more because it gets me thinking more. You know, if there's a, you know, like the Fifth Element or something where, like, it's just a
different future world, clearly, like not
and so with this, at least I'm engaged all the time because I'm thinking, oh,
but actually,
yeah,
that's funny that you say that, because the Fifth Element is a good movie to compare to this because it's the same kind of tone, kind of. It's like a silly sci-fi movie.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like, you can laugh at it, but also kind of get swept up a little bit in the romance of it all, a little bit.
A little bit.
No. Fifth Element? Totally. Yeah. I mean, that's what I'm saying. I mean, you know, it's a, you know, like, the Fifth Element has a lot of action, but it also, you know, has a lot of just you know, snappy scenes. A lot like Adjustment Bureau. I mean, yeah, they're on different playing fields. Also, let me quickly say, the New York City location shooting in this movie,
I was so happy.
I don't. Yeah, like good. Like,
they love New York City.
Like shoot in New York. Yeah. Like it looks better. Like it just looks better. I mean, maybe it's because we both live here now, and like, you know, literally a shot of every single location. I mean, knew where that was.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But like, yeah, and also the ballet, like, amazing. Like Emily Blunt, beautiful, just amazing. Let's talk about Emily Blunt for a second. Let's actually do it.
Yeah, what was the last movie I saw? The Wolfman. She was in another show. Oh, Gulliver's Travels.
Like Emily Blunt, first of all, maybe a better agent is needed, because watching her in this movie just convinced me that like this woman should just be like winning Oscars all the time for like, not for this movie, but like, you know, just for like being an actress, like being a capable actress, like. You know, to get, you know what I mean? It's like she was so good in this movie, and you kind of wonder, like, where she been, I guess?
Yeah.
You know, like, she had that breakout in Devil Wears Prada, and then she had, like, you know, moments in Charlie Wilson's War, I guess, or something, and, like, the you know, she was in Sunshine Cleaning. Like, who saw that movie? You know what I mean? Yeah. Like just...
We got a kind of a
promising year. Oh, yeah, The Young Victoria, right? I forgot about that. Yeah. I mean,
The promising year for Looper. The next year.
Oh, yeah. She's in Looper. She's a female lead in that. Yeah. Which would be nice. Salmon Fishing in the Yemen. Lassie Hallström. He makes a good movie every 5 years. And he's due.
Yeah. Nicholas Stoller.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe her agent and manager is doing...
It's kind of been a rough...
You know, it's been a rough trek. Especially I mean, she was in Romeo and Juliet. Gulliver's Travels, The Wolfman. I mean, that's rough. That's a rough stretch. But damn, is she good in this movie. Like, and let's just like talk about their chemistry for a minute and how it was just
unbelievable.
Amazing. Like, what? Like, just, you don't see that, you know? Right. I don't know. Like, honestly, when was the last time you saw chemistry like that?
Yeah, and not even relying on sex, which is how everybody does it now.
Oh my God, exactly.
And the sex scene is played for laughs. Right, like, was there... The guys in the room when he's... Yeah.
Exactly. It was like barely a sex scene. It's like amazing, you know? And it's like, ugh, there's so many... I don't know. But, yeah, I mean, there's just
nothing. I did kind of think about this, like, okay.
I mean, we can get into the silly stuff. There's a lot of silly stuff.
Well, no, okay, so, like, this guy, who clearly, I mean, she was engaged to, obviously loves her a lot, the other guy, like, I kind of felt bad for that guy. Like, like they were going to get married that day.
Wait, you mean literally Natalie Portman's husband? Because, oh, that guy, like, the choreographer, No, because, like, that's the relationship in this movie. Yeah, it's like, she's a famous ballerina.
Yeah.
Right? And then this dude, Adrian is, like, the choreographer. And she's like, well, I broke up with him because, like, I love you more.
But it's like, that guy, like, he has a life. Like, he loves her a lot. He probably doesn't know too much about Matt Damon because he's not been in the picture.
Totally.
Like, so, like, I kind of felt bad for
him. Well, dude, it's the Bridges of Madison County thing. My dad always says that movie, right?
Yeah.
He's always like... You know, Clint Eastwood is this photographer who comes into this small town, and he, like, just romances this housewife who's lonely because her husband is working fucking double shifts to pay the bills. And my dad, working man that he is, he's always like, you know, the husband, all he's trying to do is support his family, and this you know, hussy is out, like, you know, with this artist photographer, you know, and then, like, you know, and so there's definitely that element to it where you're like, well, you know, this dude probably loves this girl, and then it's like this other guy, every, like, 11 months/3 years just pops up and is like, hey, I still love you. We should really try this again. And she's like, what are you talking about? She's like, oh, but seriously. And he's like, and she's like, okay, fine.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, that's a little ridiculous.
A little, yeah.
I mean, there's some howlers of lines, for sure. I mean, you kind of can't get away from that. But you know what? It's like John Slattery has the majority of them, and thankfully he's like just, he's a baller. Yeah. And so he delivers them with like kind of a schnide tone, where you just laugh and you kind of forget how maybe silly the line is, you know?
Yeah.
Anthony Mackie, on the other hand, doesn't have that kind of thing going on. He takes a little too seriously, and you kind of spend most of your time with him being like, ooh,
did
you have to explain it like that, you know?
If we're going to compare it to Inception, which a lot of people have, like, Inception, you know, they set up the rules, and then you see it. With this movie, you're almost... And Inception, they do it sometimes, like, they explain the rules as it's happening, but in this movie, it's much more like they're explaining the rules as you're seeing them, like that.
Right, which is a little cheap, for sure.
You think cheap? See, I like that.
You like that?
Well, because you're in the moment and you're like, okay, well.
But I mean, it's like almost like, but it's at some points, it's almost like, because for example, it's like Anthony Mackie's talking to him, and you're like, well, how is he, like, they know everything, like, how is he talking to him? And then it's almost like he's just like, oh, but the water, like, when there's water around, you can't, it's like, oh.
Yeah, okay, that was bad. But I like the moments where they're, you know, they have this book, which, kind of good graphic design, I mean, good visual effects, that was the other visual effects.
Oh, I like that a lot, the adjustment book.
Yeah, where you can see their past, and then if there's an incident point, I think they call it, this red dot.
Right.
I wasn't clear whether that's sometimes it's like bad and then sometimes it's a good.
And also, for those who don't, let me just get into this quickly. For those who don't like the ending, and I get why you don't like the ending. Let's go. But for those who don't like the ending because they think it's like, and the ending, of course, is that love conquers all. Right, that's the ending of this movie, and you know they.
Oh, I love. By the way, I loved. Before you go, I just love like that idea of like, you know, you can do this. And like have retrieve your wildest dreams.
Can I tell you something about the reason I love this movie? Okay, and this is the reason. And hopefully,
well, first let's explain if you want to. Like,
well, no, yeah, I'll explain it. Okay. Let me preface it with this. Yeah. Okay, me and you, Jordan, right? We run this website, and we also want to go into the business of filmmaking. We're trying actively as we speak to do the exact same thing, right? And I always and you read about people like James Cameron, you know, five wives, and you read about people like Stanley Kubrick, who's, you know, is a hermit, and you read, you know, whatever. Okay. And you think like, damn it, you know, do I have to, you know, in order to become this great artist, you know, not only do I have to, you know, think like a great artist and obviously make those hard calls as an artist, but do I have to make those hard calls as a man, and like, you know, with these women that I know and with these friends that I have, and, you know, maybe not take a call and maybe not, you know, take a date and blah, blah, blah. And so, you know, obviously it's a relatable feeling for people like us and people probably like who are listening right now. So in this film, one of my favorite scenes of the movie, he's talking to Terrence Stamp, who's like one of the head adjustment bureau people. And they're watching Emily Blunt dance this beautiful modern dance, which, you know, if you're a fan of ballet at all or any kind of modern dance, you'll love this little moment. And the Newman score is playing just under the tones, just high enough. And Terrence Stamp says, and you hear in the trailer too, essentially Terrence Stamp says, like, look, you know, if you're with her, you'll be with her and you guys will love each other. But, you know, if you're with her, and if you're not with her, you'll become the president of the United States, and she'll become one of the most celebrated choreographers of all time. If you're not with her, but if you're with her, she'll teach dance to sixth graders, and you'll never go into politics again.
Got a lot of laughs in my theater that line.
Really? Well, I mean, the sixth graders line. Really?
6 year olds.
Because like, I'm not gonna lie to you, like that scene like really affected me because of the relatability of that, you know what I mean? And so, I don't know. I mean, that was another kind of scene that really anchored me. And you know, just to kind of, you know, follow up on that, the end of the movie, right? Then they do, my point is to those haters of the end of the movie is they do set it up, right? Like they say halfway through, if he kisses her, right? And this is another scene. If he gives her a real kiss, if they have a real kiss, it's going to change. Without our, you know, the Adjustment Bureau people say this, we are not going to be able to affect the change that is going to recur if they kiss truly. So they set that up. And then this, you know, obviously halfway through the movie, the kiss gets interrupted because, you know, it's halfway through the movie. And then at the end, kind of ridiculously, nobody decides to interrupt the kiss, but it happens.
But get me wrong, didn't they have sex and stuff? Like they kissed a lot before?
No, but I think it's like but like that's all part of the plan though.
Oh, okay.
Like at the end of the movie when they're escaping, like plan is to corner them and to reset Matt Damon so that he doesn't remember. But like they don't Teddy know, Daniels like style. If they can get a really good kiss off, you know. Which it's very silly, but like I don't know, I was with it. You know, I was with it. And then did Anthony Mackie have to appear at the end and explain what exactly happened? No, you know that would have been better if he maybe had not done that. But you know, it worked. I liked it. I was with it to the end.
Yeah. Totes agreed.
Yeah. I mean, I got nothing else to say. I was just, you know, and you know, like you said, what you loved, the dreams or your dream girl.
Oh, yeah.
Is, totally. You know, the heart of the movie, I guess.
Yeah. I'd be surprised, even like last year, I mean, like there is like, very how is few this
movie,
effective.
Right. I mean, how is this movie not a crowd pleaser?
Right.
Like, how is this not a crowd pleaser?
Right.
It is.
Yeah. And even, I mean, there are, I wouldn't even say the sci-fi elements are that strong that it should turn people off. And even, they're not, the trailers, I guess they do, I mean, in the marketing, they are kind of doing
the
heart.
I mean, they sell more as an action movie, which, I mean, you know, you can't really blame them for.
Right.
But I mean, like, people have the capability to, like, watch a movie like this and enjoy it. Like, I don't understand the overwhelming, like,
I've talked to a few people that hate the, you know, like, the really in-your-face, you know, your fate will be adjusted new marketing, because they, you know.
Yeah, well, yeah. That's,
so I think, I mean, that's not really what it's about. A turn off, you know? Though.
Yeah, I mean.
So if they sell it more, nice romance, maybe not. But still, I mean when is so the last time a nice romance
did, you know, exactly. Yeah. You know, it's like. You know, so, when was the last time you saw Matt Damon in a romance, too?
This,
you know,
this is actually nice. I mean, he did fantastic in True Grit, but you know, he's been a string of not so great movies.
Right, I mean, and like, you know, he hasn't, on. I mean, it's,
well,
on a,
well, honestly, Hereafter, as much as I don't like that movie, I thought him and Bryce Dallas Howard did
that
have,
is a romance,
have,
isn't it,
have a solid, yeah, solid few scenes.
Yeah, and then, and like, you know, he has that, like, little romance,
actually,
the other little romance.
Yeah.
I don't know, but that's,
oh, that one,
Hereafter.
That one.
That's like, okay, oh, okay. Well, yeah, I mean, you know, I'll say this about Matt Damon. It looks, I mean, he's making diverse decisions.
Yeah.
And I can't wait to see his next movie, so.
We Bought a Zoo,
which, oh my God, I can't wait to see.
And then,
Cameron Crowe.
And then Elysium, please get in my mouth.
Or Elysium. Thank you.
Sorry.
All right.
I actually watched two, and then Inside Job I watched today. So,
which you narrated.
Nice little Matt Damon.
Little Damon.
And then,
action.
I mean, if Margaret comes out this
Contagion.
Year. And then Contagion. And, I mean, obviously Happy Feet 2 in 3D.
I mean, obviously.
So, nice little, it looks like a nice little
God,
turnaround.
Oh, God, I hope Liberace happens soon.
Yeah. So, Adjustment Bureau, highly recommended, I would say. Out of all the movies we talked about, I would put this one even above. Rango is a better movie, I guess you could say, but.
You had more fun with
Adjustment Bureau, yeah. Definitely.
They don't make movies like that.
That's true. And,
anymore.
And a lot of people, I mean, Roger Ebert specifically, but some other people said, you know, they had this concept and they just didn't go all the way with it. Like, if it was better directed, they could have done better. But I liked the way he handled it.
Yeah,
film.
I mean, I just don't. I mean, I just honestly
like,
don't. I
feel like
agree.
He wanted to
agree.
Be like Dark City, which is his favorite.
You know, in
movie
my mind,
time.
Anyway, we've talked about this. Yeah, right, exactly. In my mind, this is the duplicity of this year. I mean, this is a movie that'll be underappreciated, but, you know, I really feel like 10 years from now, 5 years from now, people will really say, you know what? Damn it. Like, really missed a good one there. I mean, and I said the same thing about Take Me Home Tonight. I think this has been the weekend for those movies. So,
except for Beastly, which we didn't
except
see.
Except for Beastly, which we didn't see.
We could also review. We did see Happy Thank You More, Please, which came
we
out.
We did see that.
Do you want to?
You want to do a quick little
let's do
2 minutes?
Quick little Happy Thank You More, Please.
Overwritten.
Overwritten.
Overlong.
Bad, kind of not.
Too many pop songs.
And not. I didn't really like the characters too much.
Yeah, I mean, cliche. You know.
Yeah.
Kind of a gimmicky title. All things told. A gimmicky title, you know? Yeah. Didn't really work. Like Josh Radnor, who wrote and directed the film, he is Ted in How I Met Your Mother, the lead actor. He's a talented guy. I mean, I hope he writes something else. You know, I think he's got the chops. I just don't think he had... I don't know. There's something about the movie. It's like, you know, Malin Ackman's character has alopecia, and it just feels forced because she's, like, bald all over. Like, she, you know, obviously hairless disease... It just doesn't feel real, you know? Yeah. Tony Hale is miscast. And Kate Mara is great. You know, I love her. I really do. But doesn't have a good enough voice for the end of the movie,
yeah.
You know? Like, you know, there's things about it that just don't work, you know? Yeah. It's like they make fun of Woody Allen.
Oh, yeah.
During the weakest part of the film, which is like the Zoe Kazan.
Oh, Zoe Kazan.
And
get out of here.
And the other
stop.
Guy from The
stop
Wire.
Acting.
What?
Zoe
Paulo Schneider. Pablo Schneider. Paulo Schneider.
Yeah.
You know, it's like they have... This whole thing about he wants to make film in LA and she wants to stay in New York because it's like New York's a better city, and like who hasn't had that argument 1,000 fucking times? Like, I don't want to see it for 15 minutes on the screen, especially if you're gonna insult Woody Allen. Like,
yeah,
what?
Yeah.
Like, don't do that. Like,
yeah,
what
really
you...
a lot of dead jokes.
So stuff like
too.
That, a lot of dead jokes, a lot of dead air.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Very dry.
And it's weird because it won the Audience Award last year in Sundance.
And a lot of people like this movie.
And
like
it got bought by one person, then that place got that went under, which was obviously the publisher. We've talked about them, the publishing company.
Yeah.
And then it got picked back up by Anchor Bay, which is like, you know, kind of apples and oranges, you know, like, you know, trading, you know, one bad thing for another kind of, because they... Not great at releasing movies, and you know, sure enough, I think this movie kind of opened with the
whimper. Made $30,000 this year. I don't
know.
That's
a shame.
Two locations, which isn't terrible, but
right. I mean, well, true. I mean, maybe it'll keep getting a platform and it'll, you know, find.
I just
audience.
Don't think. I mean, even if Fox Search, I mean, they could sell it a little better than them, but then Anchor Bay. Just because it's kind of there, and it, you know,
but it's definitely their niche. Definitely their niche.
But yeah, it just doesn't have like. There's no, not a single sequence in this movie where I was impressed by the visuals. Like.
True. I mean, there's a couple. I mean, there's one specific nice moment where Josh Radner's character, I think his name. What's his name in the movie? I don't even know. It's Sam is his name. He's talking. He essentially finds this black kid, this young black kid. Right, on the subway, who gets separated from his foster mom and takes him home, which is like a whole nother thing we shouldn't even get into. Like the fact that if you took home a black kid or any kid, any foster kid for more than 12 hours, you'd be arrested and jailed.
Yeah.
And he has the kid for 6 days, 4 days. Spoiler alert, like that would never happen. And he goes to jail, and then spoiler alert, gets bailed out, which would also never happen. Like, if you kidnap somebody, you get the book thrown at you. But anyway, so this kid has, and he's talking to the kid, and the kid's like an orphan, he's poor, and he ran away from home. And he makes a really nice comment about how, like, he's this white, you know, kid from, like, the suburbs, and his parents are great, and he's got nothing to write about.
Yeah.
And that's a nice, like, kind of mean-spirited, Woody Allen-esque hard line. That if they had more like that, it would have been kind of a great movie, you know? But unfortunately, it's barely a good one.
Yep. Amen. All right.
All right.
Let's wrap that up. Yeah, so what next week?
What do we got?
We got Bad Los Angeles.
Ooh.
Which.
Aliens.
Yeah, and then.
And Soldiers.
Mars Needs Moms. And then Red Riding Hood.
Wait, more aliens.
More aliens. Moms. And then Red Riding Hood.
Wait, more aliens. More aliens.
No.
Werewolves or whatever.
Whatever. no, so, you know, we'll probably see Battle Los Angeles. There's no screening. Jane Eyre. We'll review
Ooh,
that.
Ooh, yeah. Can't wait.
We're seeing that.
God, so, can't wait.
And Black Death comes Careful out. Canada. So I'll review that.
Black
and Certified
Death.
Copy.
Answer
that.
Wow,
so
good.
We'll do an indie rent. We'll do indie
I'm excited.
Week. So, yeah. I'll look forward to that.
Look forward to that.
Yeah,
please
I would,
look forward to that.
I could say, having seen Black Death and Certified Copy, I recommend both of
And
those
I could
films.
Say, having seen sort of a copy,
you could back
you should
it
obviously see it, because it's a great movie.
Yeah. Black Death is not great, but it is definitely watchable. I mean, more than watchable. It's interesting. So
yeah, I can't wait to see it.
So we'll talk about those in depth, and there's a lot to talk about with Black Death. So thank you for listening to the Film Stage Podcast. I'm Jordan Rapp. You can email us at editors@thefilmstage.com.
And I'm Dan Mecca, and you can find me at DJMECCA at Twitter.
Nice. All right. Thank you.
Twitter.com/DJMecca.
All right. Thank you, and have a good night.